We're back with Rafe Esquith. You may have heard of him as part of the Hobart Shakespeareans. You may have heard of him for the book that he's written that lots of folks are reading, whether they're parents or teachers or kids probably, is called Teach Like Your Hair Is on Fire. And Joy Berry is with us as well. Teach Like Your Hair Is on Fire. Sounds like a rock and roll song, Mr. Rock and Roll. Your ability to say, oh, this is going to be fun, seems to run through everything that you're doing. Haven't we lost track of fun is when you learn best?
That's why I do things. And I don't think that fun and hard work have to be mutually exclusive. Joy was mentioning before about music. And my great lesson, I saw a great music teacher in my young career working with the kids in the orchestra. And boy, she worked those kids hard. I mean, they were on task and they worked very hard. But they also would laugh at themselves when mistakes were going. She would laugh at herself. And I started to realize, wait a minute, these kids are having a great time, but they're not fooling around. And you got to laugh at yourself sometimes. I mean, anytime I draw a picture on the chalkboard, everybody laughs at me because I'm a terrible artist. But it doesn't mean we're not focused. And to create that culture of excellence, I teach the children that excellence is like being pregnant. You can't be a little bit pregnant. You are or you're not. So we take our work seriously. I mean, here we are in Atlanta, and Dr. King said, if you're going to sweep the streets, sweep them like Shakespeare, you know? So whether we're playing baseball or a grammar lesson or learning geography, we take it seriously. But they are 10 years old, and you got to have a sense of humor, I think. I think you would be the best teachers. You hear laughter in the classroom.
Yes. And unfortunately, many people walk by the classroom who hear laughter want to go in and say, what's the trouble in here? What are you doing? What's going on?
Do you know, I've actually seen classrooms with a rule on the wall, no laughing. And I'm thinking, no laughing? What's next? No breathing? You know?
My goodness.
Terrible.
You have so many tricks of the trade in this particular book. You've also written another book. I think one of the things that I found most alluring was your ability to say, this is important, this isn't. We're going to do Shakespeare, but we're not going to do props. We're not going to do costumes. We're not going to an auditorium. You do this in your very own classroom.
Absolutely.
And then you said the most radical thing in this whole book. The children sit on their desks. Oh, my God. Children sitting. Oh, well, it stopped me in my tracks. Well, if they can sit on their desks, which, you know, for when I was in school, wonderful public school, we'd get, you know, goodbye. If a kid can sit on their desk and the teacher wants them to, my God, the whole world is open. There's also the breaking of the rules as well as the rules, right? Mm-hmm. And this six-level business that you do feeds into all of that, right?
Well, you hit a key point, though. When teaching and parenting becomes art, it's seeing the big picture. So when I'm teaching the kids Shakespeare and we do a play in the classroom, what is the real objective? I want the kids to learn language. Remember, these kids don't speak English. If they can speak English well, it's going to open doors for them. Yes. That's just a fact. Painting a scene or working on a costume may not open doors for them. So all that energy is wasted energy. It's all about the language. When you watch my
students... And you still do the art.
We still do art, but yes, not for the play. Mm-hmm. The play is about learning language. And when people watch the kids, and they're with me on this road trip right now, they perform every night, I always ask the kid, the audience, when you watch them, did you think, gee, they're great, but couldn't we have a castle wall? Nobody's thinking about that. They're so focused on the children themselves. They become the star, not some teacher painting a glittery wall in the background. And I think with experience, you start to figure out what to leave in and what to leave out, what's important and what's not. But that's just experience. That's not because I'm a good teacher.
Joy, when you sat on the school board, you were part of rewriting the whole curriculum. Can these principles be applied to everything?
These are basic principles, but they also need a good deal to move them forward. The passion that Rafe has is not universal. Mm. That's number one. He is willing to continue learning. That's number two. And to share that learning, and the youngsters are real people to him. Mm. There's a big difference.
You know, one of the reasons I wrote as the book Methods and Madness, the methods section, it's like Joy said, it's basic stuff. Basic stuff in understanding problems or adding some science to your curriculum or how to approach U.S. history. There are great teachers who have to go home at 3 o'clock. They got childcare issues and things. I salute them. But as long as you're there from 8 to 3, then teach like your hair is on fire. Give it everything you got. And then the madness section is for people who are insane like me who want to do rock Shakespeare shows. But the method section, it's not something revolutionary.
The rock and roll part appealed to me because, of course, that's my generation too.
There you go.
We were talking with somebody, Bill Russell and I were talking with somebody not long ago who said, well, you know, it'll just be the music. Wait a minute. The music is history, it's culture, it's beauty, it's everything if you open yourself to it being everything.
And kids who play music, when they start to say, wait a minute, I can play classical music, I can play jazz, I can play rock and roll, I can do ballads. Most children today are so narrow in their thinking, they only listen to one kind of music. Again, it's that bigger picture. We want our kids open to many points of view.
Well, I do wonder, is there a systemic problem here that maybe we don't? Maybe we want them to be little automatons and do what they're told?
Look at the iPod, for example. The iPod with its shuffle now.
Yeah.
Our kids have no attention span. They can't even sit down and listen to what an artist has to say for an hour. They've got to push that shuffle button every 2 minutes. So systemically, we are hurting our children. One of the reasons we do Shakespeare or music is it helps kids understand long-term goals, that this is going to take us a year to put together. And that's why my kids have such great attention spans, which has become a real problem in working with children today, their lack of attention span.
Or the adult lack of attention.
it's really true.
You mean reading a whole book? The other thing that you say that, I mean, there's so many places you can go from this elegant little, if you will, skeleton, and your humility in saying, this is just a place to start. You figure it out. When I was thinking about where do you take this into the bigger world, I thought, well, he's got a kid who goes to film school. He's got kids who are lawyers. You're not telling them what their destination is. You're telling them, here, you find a path. Is that the way education is supposed to be?
Yes.
One of my favorite moments ever, I take my former students on college tours, and we were walking around Columbia, and simultaneously, one of my boys said, I would love to go here. While another boy was going, I'd never want to go here.
Columbia
Perfect.
University.
Perfect.
In the middle of
Perfect.
New York City.
They're both figuring out what's best for them.
Yes.
Yeah.
But my job was, I got them to Columbia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That they actually have these options.
Well,
but I would never tell a child what to do.
From 6:30 in the morning until 9 o'clock at night, you are very clear. I teach, they learn. I'm the grown up, and it's not like they're going to. This chummy business has its limits. Is that right, Joy?
I would say that in Rafe's class, there's this understanding that there's this mutual respect.
Absolutely.
And you don't cross those barriers, you don't cross the lines, and yet you're able to move freely.
You are able to move freely, and
that seems like a dichotomy.
The only lie that the only line in our class is honesty. If you are dishonest in my class, the rules change instantly. You can make a million mistakes. You're just a kid. You can forget your homework, blow the test, spill the paint. Just be straight with me. The honesty, the issue of lying in my classroom is absolutely, Rafe is the law. Tell the truth.
Rafe tells the truth. This is the Paula Gordon Show. We'll be right back for some more of it. Be with us when we return.